Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
We'll do it live. Fuck it.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, June 7, 2022, and this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. Day 506 of the Biden-Harris administration, 150 days until the 22 midterms. I'm on Instagram, the Bob Seska is my handle, fun weird stuff over there, and on Twitter, the fun stuff and weird stuff on Twitter, too. Bob Seska _ go. And you can follow Buzz Burbank at Michael J. Elston on Twitter. Link in the description. And look, he's sitting right over there, too.
Can you say Buzz Burbank?
What do you mean?
You've said it all.
Hi. It's just Sudafed. It's not like I'm taking it to a school.
They think I'm planning a mass decongesting. Hi, yeah. Bob. Hi, everybody.
Hi, how are you?
He's Bob. I'm Buzz. And we're pretty excited today. We just found out we're running the concession stand at the January 6th hearing. So popcorn,
big
peanuts,
money, big money,
ice cold
right there,
beer. Yeah. The live primetime insurrection hearings do start on Thursday of this week.
Yay.
Congressman Jamie Raskin says these hearings will, and I quote, blow the roof off the House. It's got to be true because they've just been picked up by Netflix. They backed the winners. Yeah. Okay, now is it or is it not a coincidence that Pride Month would begin with a week-long tribute to a queen? Does that? Nobody planned
that. Oh my! Oh my!
And so Elizabeth now has occupied the throne for 70 years.
Wow!
Historians say this could have been avoided with more fiber. What do I know? Here's how dumb I am. I've been driving around all my friends' houses the last couple of months to warn them about gas prices. So Republicans don't want to talk about guns. So instead, they're focusing on inflation in this election year.
Mm-hmm.
Their complaint is inflation is cutting into their ammunition budgets.
So sad, isn't it? Sad for them.
Very sad. Yeah. And this was a surprise. I didn't see this coming. A British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, survived a vote of no confidence yesterday.
Wow.
But they made him promise to fix his hair.
It's about damn time.
The U.S. Postal Service is out with a new stamp featuring former First Lady Nancy Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
Here's why I don't think it'll be very popular. It's not one of those self-adhesive stamps. You got to lick it.
All right. Starting out the week with a great Rocky Mountain Mike.
Yeah.
I love this one. Such a classic.
Got a call from an old friend who used to be real gross. Said he couldn't go on the Republican way. Avocado toast. Now he listens to Stephanie's show from L.A.
And my show. Our show, yeah.
I don't need you to tell me your lies from the alt-right. I don't care you insist that Joe Biden go home. It's a big lie. Go ahead with your orange lies. Throw me a bone.
Yeah. Just shove it up your ass, the big lie. My favorite part right there. Rocky Mountain Mike, Rocky MNTN Mike on Twitter. Go there and get scolded by Mike, why don't you? It's a rite of passage.
It is, indeed. Everyone should do it. He's a national
treasure. I have not yet been scolded this month. I'm
Keep a calendar on that, do you? We're going to be talking and hearing a lot about the big lie in the week ahead. I think we're all very excited and nervous about the hearing Thursday.
Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, the Select Committee holding a hearing to provide the American people with a summary of their findings about the coordinated multi-step effort to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Apparently, as you said, Jamie Raskin says it's going to blow the roof off the place. I hope he's not overplaying his hand when it comes to expectations.
I don't think so. And yeah. I've been reading, you know, some of the planning, and they're still putting this thing together even at the last minute. But I like what I've seen of the framework so far. And I know we're going to talk about this perhaps in more detail later in the show.
Yeah.
But I'd like to say right up front, a lot of people don't know this. This presentation on television is being produced by the former president of ABC News.
Does that mean the Olsen twins will be on the...
No.
Oh, it's ABC News. I thought you were talking about ABC Network.
From the news division, but he is a television, an experienced television producer.
Good.
In the field of news. And so I believe that along with the Democrats, he's put together, and with the committee, which is bipartisan, we have to keep reminding people of that.
Yeah.
With the committee, he has, I think, helped them put together a very, very compelling show. I understand there'll be big revelations in each of the six hearings.
Excellent. Very much looking forward to that. And that'll be followed by the Battle of the Network Stars. No, wait, that was... Right. That was in the 70s. Fox News not carrying the hearings because they're cowards. The bubble has to be maintained, of course, and no actual information can break through the bubble. It occurred to me the other day that what Fox News is a 24-hour-a-day reality show. It's based on real events, but the things that they talk about don't really happen the way they talk about them. So it is very much like a reality show where they take things that actually occur in people's lives and then contrive them using writers and editors and directors and television magic to make it into something that it's not.
Well, I think it's important. I think it's important that we realize it's not just what Fox tells. It's not just the lies they tell.
Yeah.
It's what they don't tell. It's what they don't say. And not carrying these hearings is part of not saying it.
That's
also,
right.
Of course, they know their name's going to come up a lot in these hearings. They are one of the subjects of these hearings. It's sort of understandable why they wouldn't carry it, but it's all the more reason they are not a news network.
Do you think the information at, especially this first hearing, because this is going to be the highest ratings of all of the hearings, since it's the very first one, it's prime time. Do you think this is going to break through the partisan thing? Like, oh, this is just the Democrats on a partisan witch hunt. And I'm talking about not necessarily with the red hats. Obviously, Republicans are all going to be watching Fox News Channel or something else. They're not going to be paying attention to this. What I'm talking about are the folks, you know, the people, as I always kind of define them, the people out there driving their kids to soccer and going to the grocery store and working their jobs, et cetera.
I hope the committee reads Jennifer Rubin, a columnist for the Washington Post, who may be the smartest person in journalism. She wrote a brilliant article this week outlining, first of all, that the committee must address two audiences, the general public. And as you just said, she pointed out, the Republicans are going to be in their corner and the Democrats are going to be in their corner. This is for everybody. This is a show for everyone. And one of the things I want us to do, I plan to do this, and feel free to join me, please, to promote this over the next couple of days as perhaps the most important television show of your life. I don't think we can overhype the importance of it. And I don't think you're going to be disappointed. You're not going to, I don't think you're, I'm almost positive there will be no post-Mueller type disappointment. I'm almost positive there'll be no post-impeachment one or impeachment two disappointments.
Yeah.
I think this one's going to stick. Lessons have been learned from past attempts to pursue justice for Donald Trump. And this is, I think you're going to see the results of these lessons learned this time.
Well, hopefully it won't be like the last season of Game of Thrones, speaking of important television shows. Hopefully it'll be a little better than that. And I'm confident that it will be, especially for anyone who's paying attention to it. And as I said, I really hope that regular people decide, all right, this is worthwhile to check out, and they take it seriously, and they don't take it as if it's just the Democrats making shit up, because they're so accustomed to that being, you know, as far as outsiders go, as far as people who don't pay attention to politics 24/7 like we do, I think their general demeanor is, oh, all those people who talk about politics, all they ever do is it's their team versus the other team. And it's frustrating to know that. I hope this breaks through that wall, that barrier.
The lawmakers and their counsel, their legal counsel, and the television producer involved are all very much aware of this fact.
Yeah.
And they're aiming for this thing. Jennifer Rubin went on to list a handful of pieces of advice for the committee, what they needed to do to succeed here. Mm-hmm. And the first thing was to establish the credibility and bipartisanship of this panel. It has to be made clear to the public up front. And one of the ways she says they can do that, and they already have planned to do this, by the way, Kinzinger is going to wrap the thing up in Game 6.
Wow.
nice. If you don't mind me calling it Game 6.
Yeah.
But Kinzinger will be there to wrap things up. Liz Cheney will play a prominent role. The Republicans, the two Republicans on this 9-member panel, will be given prominent roles throughout these hearings. Much of the testimony that will be presented will be from Republicans. Viewers will be attracted by the video appearances of Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner. This is a show, ladies and gentlemen, and it's a story. They're going to lay out a story. And the first night, this Thursday night, is really going to be about something that we just heard about in the news yesterday, and that is the involvement of the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. They actually led the charge on this.
Yes.
And appear to have been in contact with Republican members of Congress and people associated with the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So this story will, I think, come together pretty quickly, and there'll be never before seen footage, including some of the video testimony. But they're going to try to make this bipartisan by having a lot of Republicans do a lot of the talking.
Yeah.
And legal counsel will do a lot of the talking. The lawmakers are there to sort of hang back and be nonpartisan, to stay out of the way, because they don't want this to be a Democratic product.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you mentioned the Proud Boys. Henry, I love when they do this. Henry Enrique Tarrio, the former longtime chairman of the extremist group Proud Boys, was indicted on a new federal charge of seditious conspiracy with four top lieutenants on Monday. You know what? I don't like this notion of referring to these thugs as having lieutenants. Yeah. To me, that aggrandizes them too much. That gives them a stature of rank, which is ridiculous.
In hindsight, I wish we hadn't called some of these right-wing groups, like in Washington and Oregon and Idaho, places like that. I wish we had never referred to them as militias.
Oh, I know.
Because they aren't. It's a group of punks in the woods with some guns.
Yeah, weekend warriors. Yeah.
That is not a militia. It is certainly not a well-organized militia. And we've given them too much credibility by even giving them that much. So I'm with you on lieutenants, certainly.
I prefer cosplay. I prefer playing dress-em-up.
I know what you're saying. For those terms. You prefer those terms. Although I think you've done your share.
That's right. Okay. The charges expand the Justice Department's allegations of organized plotting to oppose through violence the certification of Joe Biden's election victory, culminating the attack on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. So that's bad news for Henry Enrique Tarrio.
Let's talk about just how bad that news is. And Rachel Maddow did a great job last night of explaining this. Seditious conspiracy is very, very, very hard to prove in court. It's a very hard conviction to get. Mm-hmm. Previous attempts by feds to get this sort of conviction on seditious conspiracy charges have been struck down by juries because it's that hard of a sell. So why would Justice Department prosecutors go out on this limb that they have broken off accidentally so often. Yeah. Why would they go out there one more time? Because this time they're damn sure they've got it.
Yeah.
This they wouldn't waste their time on a charge they thought there was even a 50% chance they could lose.
Yeah.
They believe there's a greater than 50% chance that they will win this case, and therefore they have decided to take this bold move for all of you who tend to criticize the Justice Department.
Yeah.
This is a big, big deal. And I know we're going to talk later about subpoenas and but the reason I want to head this off by saying the reason I think Meadows and Scavino were not charged criminally with contempt of Congress is because more serious charges await them, namely seditious conspiracy.
Interesting. Is this your theory or is this? Is this something you've read?
It's something I've read. It's not my theory, but it's a theory I have adopted. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
The reason they haven't pursued this more minor charge of contempt is not because of any fear of failing with the case, because they have something else in mind for Mr. Meadows and Mr. Scavino.
Oh boy. This is exactly what I wanted to hear, because I was not very happy with this news the other day.
Of course, none of us were.
I don't think any of us were.
Our gut reaction to it was, oh my God, what were they thinking? Well, maybe this is what they were thinking, and I think there's a good chance this is correct.
Okay, so with Peter Navarro, whiny Peter Navarro.
Stop whining.
Oh my God, knocked on my door early in the morning and they came in. Why, oh why are they picking on me?
Sad.
So sad. It's such a sad little man. But he was indicted the other day. He was... I loved reading that he was in federal custody. Whenever there's a Trump insider, someone who was inside the Oval Office. I mean, this investigation has now landed squarely inside the Oval Office. But this grand jury subpoena appears to be investigating the insurrection directly. This doesn't have to do with the congressional side of this. So we're talking about two separate things that are kind of linked through Donald Trump and through the insurrection and the big lie. This is the Department of Justice investigating the insurrection and the reason why that subpoena was important. This is just a couple of weeks ago. The reason why this is so important is it puts the DOJ's investigation of the insurrection inside the Oval Office.
Yes.
That's absolutely a big fucking deal. Glenn Kirshner was on Stephanie Miller and other places talking about how this is the first real indication that the DOJ and this grand jury that's been impaneled are investigating actively the role of the White House in the insurrection. And now that we're inside the Oval Office, it's only a couple of hops to Donald Trump. And remember, this subpoena has to do, partially at least, with communications between Peter Navarro, here's my stinger again. Peter Navarro and Donald Trump. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's good news. That's all great news.
These hearings will tie Trump directly to the riot, directly to the violent insurrection on the Congress of the United States.
Yeah.
And to attempt to thwart it and to attempt to defraud the U.S. government and the American people.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. I don't know. Again, the grand jury, this is a grand jury indictment you were talking about. The other is directly from DOJ prosecutors. So it's sort of from different angles. And one comes from a jury as opposed to prosecutors. So, they may be separate. They may be connected. It's difficult to say, but I believe the committee will draw those dots together, draw those lines together in the upcoming hearings.
Oh, goody, 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 goody. I can't wait. Meantime, great news coming out of Fulton County, Georgia.
Yep.
Fani Willis, who I'm rooting for Fani's investigation down there, because this is, as far as I'm concerned, this shows the most likely avenue for Donald Trump to face justice for what is obvious election fraud. I mean,
else were to fail, and I don't think all else will, but if all else were to fail, this will prevail. This will succeed.
Yes, I think this is a massive conspiracy to commit election fraud. And I think we need to start talking about it in those terms. We use the term insurrection, big lie, et cetera. But what this is at its heart, what Donald Trump tried to do after the 2020 election was a conspiracy to commit election fraud. And we have another story along those lines here in just a second. But Fani Willis's investigation of Donald Trump about him asking for what it was, 11,000 votes, et cetera, his effort to commit election fraud down there now expands to include Lindsey Graham.
Yes, as it should. We know Lindsey was involved in this.
Yeah, Lindsey Graham.
On his own behalf and on behalf of the president.
Yes. So he's right in the middle of all of this, this big shitstorm. And my question is, how many of these idiots are going to go to prison in defense of Donald fucking Trump? It's astonishing to me that they're like Peter Navarro is willing to stonewall Congress. He may even be willing to stonewall this grand jury in D.C. in order to defend Donald Trump.
Right.
I can't get beyond that.
Their savior.
What is it about Trump that makes these people want to sacrifice their free lives to defend him?
He was sent to us by Jesus and JFK.
Right. According to Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, asked Raffensperger in November, this is November of 2020, whether the Secretary of State had the power to throw out all mail-in ballots in certain Georgia counties, a move that could potentially have tipped the state and its 16 electoral votes to Donald Trump in the November election. Boy, sticking their necks right out. And that's not the only appendage they're sticking out in the name of Donald Trump.
The interesting thing about Lindsey Graham, I think, is you've seen him. We've all seen him vacillate just sort of from one side to the other. And let me tell you, speaking from my own personal experience on a much smaller scale, and now speaking on behalf of Lindsey, when you play two ends against the middle, they might crush you in between. and I think that's where Lindsey finds himself now. And we're reading, of course, in the last 24 hours that more and more Republicans are voters and politicians jumping off the Donald Trump bandwagon as we see more convictions, as we see more people nailed. We'll also see more people come forward hoping to minimize their penalties for this. I'm so excited about the hearings. I've been reading and reading about what we might expect in these hearings coming up and how they're being formatted, what we know so far about the structure of them. And I have even more reason to be excited about being seated in front of the TV. It's important, I think, too, for even if you can't watch the whole thing, turn it on and leave it on, because those ratings will matter. We want to reward the networks that carry this show. There will be no advertising.
Right.
But we want to reward them with numbers, with ratings numbers, to assure them that they were doing the right thing by airing these hearings. I don't want any of these networks to go, well, the ratings were a little weak on that last one. I think we're going to pull out now. Don't let that happen.
Yeah.
Turn it on, leave it on. Leave the house if you want to. I wouldn't recommend it. But by all means, turn it on and leave it on, because that's another way for us to send a message about our interest in this.
I don't want to turn ugly suddenly on this, because I am, much like you, very much looking forward to this. But my only question is, why only two primetime hearings, given the extreme historical and awful nature of what it is they're investigating? It seems like more than two hearings. I know there are several hearings that are going to happen during the day,
right?
But why not bump some of those hearings up into prime time? I guess this is a matter of networks not wanting to cover it more than two hearings.
I don't think the committee wants to overtax the American public or the networks. If they make those two prime time hearings dynamic enough, and I believe they will, with the help of an experienced television news producer.
Yeah.
If they make them dynamic enough, and remember also that although it was a different time technologically and psychologically, the Watergate hearings, many of them aired during the day as well. Not all of them were in prime time, and people found a way to watch them anyway.
Yeah. this must be a trip down memory lane for you. everything is old as new again. Yeah,
it is, because there have been so many technological advances. These hearings will be quite different than the Watergate hearings that we've seen so far.
Right.
And funny we should mention Watergate, because we have something to talk about that a little later.
That's right, John Dean, that rat.
We're gonna talk about the latest episode of Gaslit after the break, because it really focused on Gordon Liddy in prison, and it was some of the most compelling storytelling in this entire miniseries, which, by the way, is outstanding. If you're not watching Gaslit, I believe it's on the Stars Network.
Yes.
You should be watching it, because it is it's as timely as today's headlines in many ways, but it's a really interesting and insightful examination of that period of time.
Yeah. I think they're still offering this. Stars was offering like $1.98 a month starter for 3 months. So for $2 a month for 3 months, and then of course they would raise the price and charge a credit card. I plan to bail, because there's really nothing else on Stars I'm interested in seeing. But so you could do that. You could subscribe for a short trial period at like $2, $4, whatever, however long it takes you to watch the series.
Yeah.
And then cancel and have the benefit of seeing this. It's one of the most compelling television shows I've ever seen.
Yes.
I am riveted to the show. I love it. I love the tone of it and everything. So yeah, we're excited to talk about the Liddy part.
Yes, because Buzz and I both worked with G. Gordon Liddy at WJFK in Washington, D.C. Well, technically Fairfax, Virginia, but in the early 90s for me, I mean, it was 1 year for me. You had a much longer run at that radio station. But we both had enough time there to experience Liddy firsthand and all of his quirks and weirdness and his obsession with Hitler and Nazis and guns.
And Bob and I are both giving that another thought after what we saw this week.
Yeah, oh, holy shit. Oh, my God. I'm learning that I had every reason to fear him. Yeah, we'll talk about that coming up here on the show. But I wanted to add something here about Georgia, because we got this story from the Washington Post indicating that the Trump campaign knew what they were doing with the fake electors was illegal. They had an understanding that this was not on the level, that this was hinky, what they were doing with coming up with these fake electors, especially in Georgia, where a staffer for Donald Trump's presidential campaign instructed Republicans, again, according to the Washington Post, planning to cast electoral college votes for Trump in Georgia, despite Joe Biden's victory, to operate in, quote unquote, complete secrecy. An email attained by the Washington Post shows. I must ask for your complete discretion in this process, wrote Robert. The name is great. Robert Sinners. You know, maybe I should change my radio name to that. I want to be Bob Sinners.
Bob Sinners.
Bob Sinners, the campaign's election operations director for Georgia, the day before the 16 Republicans gathered at the Georgia Capitol to sign certificates declaring themselves duly elected.
He told them not to even tell their own Capitol police officers, not to tell anybody about their plans.
Again, I can't repeat this enough. This is a massive election fraud conspiracy. Quote,
it is.
Your duties are imperative to ensure the end result, a win in Georgia for President Trump, but will be hampered unless we have complete secrecy and discretion.
Right.
Holy shit. To me, and that's knowledge of guilt, isn't it?
Exactly. That's what prosecutors present to juries as a knowledge of guilt, as consciousness. They have a phrase, and I think you know the Latin for this, but it's consciousness of guilt.
Right, right. Well, that's it. I think that's all you need right there. An email, documentary evidence showing that campaign operatives, I mean, I assume all the way up to Donald Trump. I mean, we have to always assume that Donald Trump has his hand in every pie because Donald Trump loves to micromanage. So this is something that I'm sure he was involved in on some level.
No doubt. No doubt. This is all coming together at the same time. This Proud Boys indictment, the hearing coming up Thursday, this revelation about the memo, we're going to keep it secret, which presents knowledge of guilt. This is all coming together at the same time. And you mentioned Glenn Kirshner earlier, a former federal prosecutor, and he is optimistic. I've seen him pessimistic over the past few months.
I've seen
him critical of the Justice Department over the past few months. I see what I'm seeing now on Twitter is a very excited and optimistic Glenn Kirshner. And I'm telling you, because I feel this way, if Glenn Kirshner is excited about this and has confidence in this, by gosh, so do I.
Because he's willing to call it the way he sees it. And it's And it's not one of those things where he's always Mr. Happy about everything that's going on. He's sometimes Mr. Very Unhappy. Mm-hmm. So before we take a break here, real quick, we got to talk about Louie Gohmert. Since we're talking about Republican crimes, Louie Gohmert, I believe this is on Newsmax or one of those bargain bin versions, a generic Fox News version of a network, whatever you want to call it.
If you're having trouble picturing him, Louie Gohmert is a bald man who looks like a cartoon mouse.
Yes, he looks like a melon with a mouth is what he looks like. And he was on this show. Well, I'm going to play the tape because this is classic Gohmert.
This is going on his best of album.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Here we go.
DOJ actually coming after now. Trump administration officials for their failure to comport with this.
So we're talking about Peter Navarro, especially here.
Political committee.
Yep. It actually puts an exclamation point on the fact that we have a two-tier justice system. If you're a Republican, you can't even lie to Congress or lie to an FBI agent or they're coming after you. They're going to bury you. They're going to put you in the D.C. jail and terrorize and torture you and not live up to the Constitution there.
Oh, my God. All right.
Yeah, what's up with that? Yeah. Why can't Republicans? Republicans can't even lie to the FBI anymore, Bob. What has this world come to?
Yes, everything's falling apart. Lying to the FBI, they're coming after you. If you're a Republican, you can't even distribute child porn or they're coming after you.
That's right.
If you're a Republican, you can't even be a sexual predator or they're coming after you. They're going to torture you and put you in the jail. You can't even invade and occupy the Capitol or they're coming after you. Yes, of course they are. God damn the whining.
Stop whining.
The whining. So much whining from these so-called, I should say, alleged alpha Republicans.
You can't even lie to the FBI anymore. Just keep saying that over and over in your head until you've absorbed it properly.
What's the world coming to? Holy shit. Okay. Well,
yeah, they put you in the D.C. jail where G. Gordon Liddy spent some time.
That's right. And maybe you can clarify for me. He had this whole thing about the nomenclature in terms of how you refer to prison or jail penitentiary and what an inmate was.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for feeding me that. I'll be ready.
Goody. All right. Well, if the pandemic was a total disaster for your finances, you probably upped the balances on your credit cards, just needed a little extra cash. And if my guess is correct, you're paying the top allowable interest rate on that debt. So why not refinance your credit card right now into a super low interest rate and save a ton of money each and every month? Here's how you do it. With Lightstream, you can roll all your cards into one low payment at a fixed rate as low as 4.98% APR, and that's with auto pay and excellent credit. That's way lower than most cards. I know you're probably paying around 19% APR right now. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are absolutely no fees. And just for my listeners, you can apply now and get a special interest rate discount to save even more. The only way to get this discount is go to lightstream.com/sesca. That's lightstream.com/CESCA. Subject to credit approval, rates range from 4.98% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% auto pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/sesca for more information.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Bob Seska.
All-time favorite.
yeah, guess what? Metal is still a thing. Still happen. It's one of the last chart-topping aspects of rock and roll. That and country music. I don't know how
that works.
I wouldn't even classify it. I just like it.
Yes, this is the great Metal Birds. The Most Difficult Girl in the World is the name of the song from their album titled 4. It's just the number 4. TheMetalBirds.com is the name of the website. BobSeska.com/music to submit. Brand new Indie Music Countdown, our May 2022 Indie Music Countdown, now available for your listening pleasure. Roll down your windows is what I'm desperately trying to say here. Roll down your windows and turn up the volume.
Right.
Because there are a lot of great summer songs in there. So I've got a nice first crop of potential summer songs. And I know a few right offhand in that indie music countdown that are going to be in our Songs of the Summer list.
It's an oasis, Bob. It's an oasis. It's a place for everybody to escape to, and a darn nice place at that.
Yes. No politics, except maybe in the lyrics to some of the songs. I just play music for an hour, and it's one of my favorite shows every month. It's just a blast to do. It's kind of reconnecting with my DJ roots. And so is this. How about this for a segue? And so is Gaslit on the Stars Network, because for the first time ever, Buzz and I are being treated to a dramatic portrayal of G. Gordon Liddy that's more than just a cameo. I take it back. There was a made-for-TV movie about his book? Was that something
I think
happened?
So. I'm not even sure. The book was Will, and I'm not even sure I saw that, just because I knew it was, you know, his BS. And this, I think, in Gaslit is a more accurate telling of his experience in prison. And it includes the actual letters that he wrote to Frances, his wife, who he chose because of her broad hips and mathematical knowledge. She had the best DNA to birth my sons. We left in tears.
That is my favorite thing in the world hearing you talk about Liddy. That is, and doing the impression is my favorite thing that you do.
And people, if you're watching this, you may be confused. Why do I do the high Maxwell Smart voice? And he speaks in these low, serious, paced tones. The truth is, he did both. The actor has correctly captured the Liddy, who is sometimes soft-spoken. Mm-hmm. But when he was excited about something, when he was enthusiastic about something, when he was doing a radio show, his voice went up like Maxwell Smart.
Yes.
And so you got a little bit of that, you know, and I'm disappointed that we haven't gotten to experience that in the show.
No.
Maybe they didn't listen to enough G. Gordon Liddy shows to get the feel for this. But otherwise, it's amazing. The Gaslit is about Martha Mitchell and the campaign to make her look insane, which she might have been. But it's also about Liddy. I'd say he's the second most important character in the story so far. And thirdly, equally, but also very important, John Dean, who was Liddy's nemesis because Dean blew the whistle.
As a rat.
And although they both ended up in jail, Liddy ended up in a much crappier one, at Danbury, Connecticut, and also the D.C. jail for a very long time. And we just saw this dramatic presentation. And Bob, the thing I want to say to you right away, I texted you. You'd seen it the night before.
I
texted you last night when I watched it. And I was excited because we've been in the room with that man.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We've had conversations with that man.
Mm-hmm.
We have worked across the glass from that man in a radio studio.
And survived.
And we've done this for a substantial period of time. And then to turn around and see Liddy's behavior in his jail cell, in his solitary confinement cell, was just incredible. It was just an amazing, shocking experience. A shocking reminder of who we were standing in the room with back in the day.
Yeah, it's some of the most compelling. And maybe it's because we have the personal connection, but I think objectively speaking, it was immensely compelling television.
Anybody would be riveted by this.
Yes. So he's obsessed with capturing this rat after he gets thrown into solitary confinement. Mm-hmm. And so there's this rat that keeps coming in, and he's got this whole history with rats. If you read his book, book when he was a child. He claims to have, because of his fear of rats, claims to have captured a rat and eaten some of it after you know, skinning it and cooking it. And so he's got this whole history with vermin. And so he becomes obsessed with capturing this rat. And, you know, he's pulling apart his bed springs and stuff like that to make an improvised rat trap.
Yes, and did a very nice job with that.
Yes, he did, until he got overzealous and went to dive for the rat across the room and landed his arm right into the rat trap, which was...
If he had been as good at putting tape over door latches as he was in making that rat trap, he wouldn't be in that cell in the first place.
That's right.
He was an incompetent, failed burglar.
He was a
mastermind who was anything but.
When I knew him, we would refer to him as like a small, cowardly old man, like a doddering old man.
Hitler was a very small man with a very dark mustache.
Yeah.
And it's clear from Liddy's background, it actually was even back when we worked with him, that Hitler and Germany, the Hitler's Germany were a big influence on Liddy.
Oh, yeah.
Largely because of the nanny who raised him. It's just breathtaking. Whether you've stood in the room with the man or not, it's a scene you have to see.
Yeah.
It's a series you have to see because the whole thing is compelling top to bottom. I like it much better than I ever thought I would.
Oh, me too. And my question with this is, how historically accurate is his time in prison there? Because at one point he bites off a guy's ear, and that's, I think, why he ends up in solitary confinement. And
I think that happened, but I don't know.
Maybe it's in his book. I don't remember him telling stories.
Except for the letters that he wrote to his wife, Frances, during that period of time, who sincerely married because of her broad birthing hips and her... mathematical genius, which he thought would make the perfect DNA for the master race of children he was trying to raise.
Plus the fact that when she made icing for a cake, you could snap it like a twig. That was, I guess she put wax in it or something like that. But
And he was not, he refused to ever be called an inmate.
Please tell me, please. What was his thing about the nomenclature about prison?
Inmates are in asylums. We're in prison. We're prisoners. A jail has prisoners, an asylum has inmates. They're not the same thing.
He was very staunch about this.
Very important to him. And how did he pronounce Mercedes? That was it. Mercedes. That's how he pronounced the car. Mercedes.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah. He had all kinds of weird pronunciations.
He knew the German pronunciation for everything. Again, I point to Hitler.
Yeah. He was always talking about the German fighter jet, the Messerschmitt. His voice would go way up high.
Just like that.
Messerschmitt.
That's the Liddy we don't hear in Gaslit. But I'm not disappointed even at that.
Yeah. I found, because I was trying to relate to Kimberly what Liddy sounded like when we knew him. Yeah. And so I sent her a YouTube video of Liddy, I believe it was in 1996, on the Conan O'Brien show with Don Rickles. It was Don Rickles sitting next to G. Gordon Liddy on the Conan show. And he sounded and looked exactly like he did when we knew him. He's got the nasally voice and everything like that. So maybe
black thick mustache.
Exactly right. And he had a little teeny tiny comb that he would use after he would have his lunch during the show. He would eat during a commercial break on the show. Mm-hmm. And then he would take out this teeny tiny, it was almost like one of those Barbie combs, and he would comb the sandwich pieces out of his mustache. Maybe that should be something in the Smithsonian.
And I got feeling badly that I was ever part of his show, you know, because, like I said, I started my career by reporting on him. The Watergate, one of my first stories. He, in my mind, was one of the most evil men on the planet. And who knew 25 years later I'd be sitting in the Watergate Hotel doing that show with him. Anniversary show where I cop the ashtray that I'm going to give to you that says the Watergate Hotel. It's not even a hotel anymore. It's a condo and office complex now. It's just amazing to know that happened, and I feel oogie about it now. But not nearly as oogie as CBS should feel for the millions it paid him do that radio show.
Syndicated.
Nationally syndicated show. And he, on that CBS show, led a cult following. It's just amazing.
And that moment in the show, in Gaslit, where he somehow digs through the wall, almost like Shawshank Redemption style, to find the rats. and he breaks through the wall into that...
A plumbing area.
Yeah. It's very much like Shawshank, and he ends up on the other side of the wall, and he sees the rat, and he notices the rat, and then he yells at the rat. He goes, "Ha!" And then the rat turns to him and goes, "Ha!"
We cut to a close-up of the rat with its arms raised, screaming along with Liddy. So very, very nicely executed.
Oh,
I think
my God, yeah.
That's where you'll find your dramatic license in play, I think, probably.
Right.
But those letters to his wife, Frances, are very real. So, you know, it's interesting.
And then the thing I kept thinking about, and I'm not going to retell the whole story, but I had this run-in with Liddy over that Letterman photo that you had sitting on the wall in your newsroom.
What a stupid controversy that was.
Yeah, and those of you who listen to the show for a while know this story. I'm not going to retell all of it, but suffice to say, I was not one of Liddy's favorite people after that. Liddy asked me to take down the photo, and I said no, and then chaos ensued.
Yes.
And making matters worse, one of the other interns and I took that Letterman photo and cut out a bunch of heads, photocopied a bunch of heads of David Letterman, cut out the heads, and then stuck them up all over the radio station to continue to troll him.
Including a giant one on a elevator door so that when he got in it and the doors closed, he would see this giant Dave face looking at him.
But now that I look back, only someone who was 20, 21 years old would have done that to Gordon Liddy, someone as naive as I was, because now that I know... or have a stronger glimpse of how psychotic he is. I mean, I had a pretty good indication that he was psychotic when we worked there. But now that I see this portrayal of him, and then I put everything into the same context, I go, holy, what the fuck was I doing screwing around with this guy? Why was I trolling this maniac?
I don't know, but you certainly won my admiration for that. That to this day means a lot to me that you took that brave stand. I don't think anything would have happened to you, even if he is the reason we had to have bulletproof glass installed at the radio station.
That's right, Yeah, well, there was this other thing that happened where you came into work one day and you told me all about this dream that you had about somehow you got your hands on a bumper sticker that said, "Fuck Liddy."
Uh-huh.
And this was, there was more to the story, but this story about this dream had a bumper sticker in it that said, "Fuck Liddy." And before you had some of these websites where you can go and make merch like that, I went and like hand created out of contact paper a bumper sticker that said, "Fuck Liddy" for you.
And
manifesting
for
your dream.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So
and it lives on. One of us still has it. Did I give that back to you, or do
no,
I still
I think
have
you,
it?
I think you still
okay,
have it.
Then I do enough. Still have it. Yeah, I wouldn't have. I would never throw it out. So
yeah, I think
it's here.
One point, you took a photo of it and sent it to me via
that's
text.
Right.
Yeah. But this is all to say that we would stand around in the newsroom, in your newsroom at WJFK, and talk endlessly about how nuts Gordon Liddy was. And so that was an ongoing source of conversation.
But again, the thing, the big point to me out of this is that we've worked in close contact with that guy. We've been in the same room with him, been in the same studio with him. We've conversed with him. And last night we saw him screaming at rats.
And the rats screaming back, which is the even funnier part of that. I even did a college radio show with his producer, with Cameron Gray. We did a show at George Mason University, a little college radio show while I was interning there. So our connection to the Gordon Liddy show was pretty tight, all things considered, given our politics are diametrically opposed.
Not to belabor this, and this is more for you than for the audience, but Cameron Gray was also a producer of a public affairs show that I did for WJFK.
Yeah.
And it was his job to set up interviews for me in the public interest. And I found out one week that the interview he'd set up for me was about yams.
And, so you got to muster excitement about yams.
I did a solid 20 minutes on yams.
Because of course you did.
Yes, because of course.
Yeah, Cameron, I really like Cameron. Cameron and I, not only do we have the same birthday, I mean literally the same day and the same year. We were born basically within the same 24-hour span. But we did this show together. He was a smart, funny guy. Very, very nice guy.
Yeah.
I was jealous as hell because Chrisanne Baloulis was into him, not me, but that was a whole other story. And now he's like this wing nut who works for the NRA. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what
happened there either. Yeah. People change. It's just exposure to Liddy, I honestly think. Because he and another friend of ours there started working with Liddy, and over that period of time, they changed.
Yeah. Not good. The Liddy disease was infectious. Yeah.
Indeed.
Okay. So Ted Cruz and this other Senator Bill Hagerty did it again. Those of you following the show know I'm enjoying my new collection hobby, which is to collect these Republican tweets about the border and how they're actually accidentally complimenting Joe Biden's record at the border in terms of stopping people from crossing, stopping drugs coming across. So yesterday, this guy, Bill Hagerty, I say this guy, he's a United States senator, he tweeted 1,292 pounds of fentanyl, which killed more than 100,000 Americans last year, was seized at our southern border in April, a more than 420% increase compared to April 2020. This is a crisis, and Biden needs to address it now. Okay.
Where do we start?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am running out of things to say about this stupid thing.
You saw my retweet of it yesterday where I said, what part of seized don't you understand?
Yeah.
I retweeted sort of analogies like thousands of cars stopped by traffic, by red light at intersection, hashtag traffic signal crisis. Because they're hashtagging it. And this is just part of the organized messaging of the Republican Party. And they know it means nothing. Some of those folks are stupid. Mm-hmm. But not all of these Republican lawmakers are stupid. Many of them, and certainly the people they're following, are very smart. Like Ron DeSantis smart, in that they know how to manipulate people and people's emotions. And when I say people, I mean dumb people. Yeah. I mean uneducated people. It's not a question of when you see a Republican post a lie like that and try to turn the truth upside down by saying that a success is a failure. It might be because they're stupid, but more likely it's because they know. They're not just hoping their voters are stupid. Mm-hmm. They know that they are.
Yeah.
And they're using that stupidity against all of us by tweeting that sort of thing. If the drugs are seized, it means the border is holding. It means Biden's doing a good job. In fact, a 420% better job than Trump did.
Yes.
And yet they're making it sound like because all these drugs were stopped at the border, we have a border crisis.
Right.
No, that means the border's working. And it's important, and Bob's been doing this work, and I've been joining in, and I know other people have as well, in making fun of this ridiculousness, of this stupid, stupid lie.
I don't get it. I want to know who came up with this. I want to know the origin of this.
But yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
I don't want to make too big a deal out of it because I'm afraid that they're going to stop doing it. And this is wonderful. Well, I've collected maybe a dozen of these things now, maybe more.
Be careful what you wish for, because here's something else I've read that I also subscribe.
Yeah.
And that is that this is being done to foment violence, that violence is rumbling beneath the surface of this country.
Yeah.
And it includes violence against immigrants. And that's why the rednecks, the red hats, are being told over and over again, crisis at the border, crisis at the border, Second Amendment rights, crisis at the border. What do you think the result of that's going to be?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
You know, so you put that with the insurrection hearings and the everything else that's going on. I know there's been some talk about a possible Second World War. I don't know that
Second Civil War.
Civil War.
Yeah.
Thank you. I don't think progressives are armed for it. And it's a very scary time. And that's why electoral victory is absolutely vital.
Well, there's this other theory that I have for why they might be doing it this way. And that is to extend their reach, extend their social media reach for these tweets. Where there's a theory going around, Buzz, and I'm not sure if we've discussed this on the Tuesday show. There's a theory going around that says if you include mistakes in your social media, it actually extends extends the reach of your social media posts, your social media accounts, and so on. It actually puts it in front of more people because there are more interactions due to people correcting the mistake in the mentions. So there's this theory that I have. Maybe they're being deliberately stupid about this in order to extend the reach of the message. So the reach expands based on all of us going, hey, that's dumb. And then what happens is the dummies who it's actually intended for see it and agree with it and don't notice how it actually complements Joe Biden.
I don't know. Maybe. If mistakes were the defining factor, I'd be the king of Twitter by now. But, But I really think it's about spreading this lie to make Democrats look bad and to try to make Democrats look bad, no matter how stupid it is. But it's the way they frame it.
Yeah.
Their stupid voters, their stupid readers will believe it. And so I think it's good that we're retweeting it. And it's not because the only mistake they've made in those tweets are factual, you know, where they just out and out lied and reversed the truth.
Yeah.
The rest of it has been, a couple of them anyway, have been relatively mistake-free, including the ones from Ted Enrico Cruz. I think it's part of the riling up the base, and that it comes at a very dangerous time, especially with the AR-15 situation in this country.
Oh, yes. In fact, you mentioned Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz. Go fuck yourself.
Thank you, John Boehner.
Ted Enrico Cruz. We're going to just insert that in all of their names now.
Yeah, I'm going to be Bob Enrique Sesca. Thank you very
there
much.
There you go.
Yeah. Ted Cruz tweeted, $7.1 million in meth seized at Laredo point of entry. # Biden border crisis. Again, doesn't make any sense.
Ted Cruz, go fuck yourself.
Thank you. I can't play that one enough. once again, another example of this. They keep doing it and they keep doing it and they must see the mentions. I mean, they must see all of us going, hey, wait a second. But
I think
that would maybe change their mind about this line of attack? I don't know.
I think I retweeted that one as hundreds of flies stopped at screen door, # screen door crisis.
Nice.
That's, you know, I want people, I think, it, I hope it helps even the dumb among us to understand the stupidity of that tweet.
Right. Well, here we go. Unlike some podcasts, we have a couple of commercial breaks on our shows, but here's the best way to listen to the Bob Seska Show without all of the commercials. Just go right now to our Patreon page at bobseskashow.com, scroll down to the link for the ultimate edition of the podcast, and sign up for just $15 per month. In exchange for your generous support, we're going to give you a completely commercial-free version of the Tuesday and Thursday shows, plus now, as of last week, the Wednesday shows too. So Tuesday shows commercial-free, Wednesday show commercial-free, Thursday shows commercial-free, plus you get the Shadow Docket show. That is going to be included as part of the audio file on Tuesdays and Thursdays. In other words, one mega show with the free portion and the Shadow Docket combined, exactly how it's recorded, and no commercial zilch. But wait, there's more things. You're also going to get the Friday After Party podcast with me and Kimberly Johnson, included that level of support, all for just $15 per month. Again, it's the ultimate edition of this podcast, bobseskashow.com. Bookmark it, send it to all your friends, and we thank you.
Bob Seska plays more music.
Everybody.
Strolling by the river, nature has delivered another perfect day. Side by side, we while away the hours. Watch the pretty flowers as they sway, and we talk.
Oh, the great Dave Moulter, brand new single right here. This is called You and I. DaveMoulterMusic.com. Support Dave, go start downloading this one. Be one of your happier summer songs, I think.
This All right. Cheer me up. This song would cheer me up, absolutely.
Puts a big smile on my face. Okay, let's see here. The Arizona Republican Party is calling journalists domestic terrorists. Talk about inciting violence buzz. There you go. There's another great example
against,
of
and
it.
Now against journalists,
Yeah. And this is what I fear, and I don't want to turn this into a thing where I'm, you know, quote-unquote punching hippies or whatever, but when we start to make politics personal by getting into people's faces at restaurants and so on and pounding on their doors or whatever, and this is something that Jesse Waters at Fox News Channel was doing years and years ago while he was still an intern on Bill O'Reilly's show or whatever. But this new in-your-face style of politics is going to, my fear is, it's going to start looping in those of us who have public faces on social media, podcasts, etc. And when you hear a Republican Party that is brazen enough to target journalists as quote-unquote domestic terrorists, I mean, have we degraded the language that much that we're looking at members of the news media as terrorists? Oh,
yeah. Well, Donald Trump called it the enemy of the people, and they hold to that. And they, you know, that part of the American public was already dead. You know, we saw bumper stickers about the mainstream media long before we saw Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. So they were predisposed. Donald Trump brought that into focus for them.
Well, meantime, the Republicans have issued a memo to all of their operatives and the people who end up on cable news and so on, and instructed them to ignore guns and to talk inflation.
Yeah.
And this is the super-duper cynical side of the Republican Party. I mean, so much of it is cynical. It's about manipulating people is what it is. And this latest example is from a strategy memo and a series of private communications prepared for a variety of conservative candidates and organizations, which was reviewed by Rolling Stone in the days following the Uvalde school massacre. The message was clear, according to Rolling Stone: change the topic to literally anything else and let this news cycle run its course.
Right.
Part of the series of RNC pundit prep that typically lists the party's weekly political priorities. Mm-hmm. Here's the message: stay cool, run out the clock, scare some gun nuts while you can.
But, initially, right.
Yeah, but don't worry, this moment will be over soon. So essentially what the Republicans are doing is saying, yeah, American voters don't have the attention span to make this a priority for any longer than a week or so, and then something else comes along, and then they start gathering around that thing and forget about the other thing, the Uvalde guns thing, and we're just going to wait till that moment in time happens, and then we're going to proceed with our ridiculous pro-Trump agenda. And so that's it.
As I said last week, we've just come off of two horrible mass shootings. I mean, there have been many others.
Yes.
There have been more than a dozen in the last couple of days, over the weekend, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, and it's every weekend is like that. We're starting to pay more attention to it now, thankfully. But we've come off these two really high-profile mass killings in Buffalo and in Uvalde. And we're not going to let that go.
No.
Especially after, and I think it's underscored by the lack of response by police at all levels, in nearly all locations. It just made this intolerable. So many of us are saying what the president said, which is enough. And so I don't think it's going to be forgotten. We can't let it be forgotten. We're talking about it again this week, and we're going to keep talking about it, as we know you are, until we get what this country needs to protect our children and everyone else.
There was a video floating around, I don't know if you saw it, on Twitter a couple of days ago, Buzz, where there was the grandfather of one of the shooting victims that you've all been at one of the memorials, one of the impromptu memorials set up for the victims, and he was clearly quite distraught, and he was pleading with some of the police officers who were there why they didn't do anything. And it was one of the most heartbreaking pieces of video that I've ever seen in my history on the internet.
I couldn't agree more. And although I'll make no attempt to reenact it, he pointed at a sign of flowers, a memorial. It was along with a lot of other kids' memorials.
Yeah.
And he pointed to this one particular sign and said, "That was my granddaughter."
Wow.
He said, "You know, we raised her. You told her, you the police, and we the parents and the school, we told her, if you're ever in trouble, call 911.
Mm-hmm.
And she did that, and you did nothing.
Wow.
She's dead. My granddaughter is dead, and you did nothing.
My God.
And he said, arrest me, kill me, but you did nothing.
Yeah.
And yeah, and the officers stood there and listened. I don't know, you know, if it got through or if it means anything to them or if they feel badly about this. As you know, the Uvalde police, the Uvalde school system police have stopped cooperating with investigators. There's a great cover-up underway there. And that puts salt in the wounds of the deaths that we've endured and that we continue to endure because of out-of-control guns that the Founding Fathers never, ever intended.
Yeah, you know what the cops should have said, what the Republicans are recommending, which is to stay cool, but don't worry, this moment will be over soon. They should have said to that grandfather. Meantime,
the next one, tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of gun violence, a mother has been charged with manslaughter after a two-year-old fatally shoots her own father with a Glock 19 handgun. It's unclear how the boy managed to get the Glock, but his mother acknowledged that, quote, any child in the room could have figured out how to get the gun out of the bag. And one of the reasons I'm bringing up this story from the New York Times is that Republicans are recommending that teachers be armed, that there be more guns in schools, not fewer guns.
What could go wrong?
Yeah. And Buzz, you know as well as anyone that kids find a way. Kids will find a way to those guns, whether it's finding the code for the safe or whatever, the locker. And eventually some kid will get his hands on one of those firearms earmarked for teachers and he'll shoot up the school and kill a bunch of people.
Yeah,
that's inevitable.
In recent years, I wish I had the numbers directly in front of me, but the numbers I saw were 59 police officers killed by guns over a recent period of time. In that same period of time, well over 2,000, perhaps nearly 3,000 children killed by guns. It happens almost every day.
Yeah.
This is a particularly high-profile, particularly painful case. First of all, as has been pointed out, you have a child who's lost both parents now, one dead, one in jail and soon to be prison.
Yeah.
The knowledge that this two-year-old will carry all their lives that they killed daddy with a gun.
Exactly.
And then you think about the mother who, by God, losing her husband like that and having it executed by her two-year-old son, hasn't she been punished enough? Sadly, no.
Yeah.
Sadly, this is a message we have to send to parents about responsible and safe gun ownership. It's more proof that responsible gun owners that we hear about so much frequently are not. I know there are people who have the gun locks and the gun safes, and we appreciate that. We thank you for that. But you have way more of these situations where a child can reach into a bag, pull out a gun and kill their father when they're 2 years old.
There was this loony Republican congressman from Texas, strangely enough, from
Texas.
Crazy. He was from Ron Paul's old district, and his name was Steve Stockman. And for a while there, he was handing out bumper stickers to his supporters that said, "Fuck Liddy." No, I'm kidding. He said, the bumper sticker said, "If babies had guns, there'd be fewer abortions." And my response to that, every time I would see that bumper sticker pop up on social media, was babies already have guns. Babies are shooting their parents and shooting each other with those firearms in a house. I mean, this is the truth about having a gun for protection in your home. I collected some statistics here about
this. Let's do this.
In a Gallup survey conducted in August 2019, gun owners were most likely to cite personal safety or protection as the reason they own a firearm. So there's your setup, this illusion of safety that we're fooling ourselves into believing will occur with a firearm in the house. But guns kept in homes are more likely to be involved in a fatal or non-fatal accidental shooting, criminal assault, or suicide attempt than to be used to injure or kill in self-defense. Think about that. You are more likely to be killed by your firearm than a home intruder.
You are the most likely victim of your own gun.
That's right. Approximately 1 in 3 guns in homes with children is kept loaded and unlocked. 1 in 3 guns in homes with children is kept loaded and unlocked. In a 2017 study published in Science, Philip Levine and his colleague Robin McKnight found that where gun sales increased after Sandy Hook, rates of accidental deaths rose too. They estimated that 60 additional people, including 20 children, Steve Stockman, were killed in the aftermath of Sandy Hook because of the excess guns people purchased.
Right. Right.
For a profit, by the way.
The wind can change, and it increases gun sales. Every time Democrats speak on the subject, anytime a Democratic candidate throws their hat into the ring, anytime there's a mass shooting, the answer is, let's go buy more guns.
There you go.
It's absolute madness. It only happens here in the United States. There's something terribly wrong with the fabric of this country that we're so attached to guns that we're willing to allow children to die and to kill each other and sometimes their parents.
Please stop deluding yourself about these things. Most parents don't think their child knows where their gun is stored, but when researchers ask children directly, 40% of these same children are able to correctly identify the location of the gun.
Yeah,
parents also often incorrectly believe their child has never handled their gun, when in reality, 36% of children say they have. Think about this in terms of schools, too. More than 80% of guns used by youth in suicide attempts were kept in the home of the victim, a relative, or a friend. And finally, gun owners in a household are more likely to report that their gun is stored unlocked and loaded compared to the non-owners in those households. This suggests a need for better education of household members regarding safe storage in homes with children. But we all know exactly what happens when anyone tries to recommend the right thing to do in this country. Don't you tell me what to do with my guns in the privacy of my own home.
I'm going to tell you what to do. You won't tell me what I have to do. I want to squeeze in. I hear the closing music, but I want to squeeze in a story here. I have two people in my life, or formerly. One is a former friend. One is a current friend. They are both recently widowed. And what their wives did not know when they were alive was that their husbands owned guns and kept them in the house.
Wow.
Now, one of the men is very stable, is doing very well, couldn't be more responsible. He's been a public servant. I know this guy. I trust this guy. I don't worry about him. I am no longer in contact with the other gentleman who also had a gun that his wife wasn't aware of and had it when she died. And he is not so stable. And so I don't know what has or will happen to him. But I think about both of these men. And I think about the fact that you have a 3 times greater chance of committing suicide if you have a gun in the house.
Yep. It's right there. The temptation is there. You can see it. Someone who is maybe predisposed to a bipolar condition, some sort of mental illness, maybe you combine that with drugs and alcohol or one or the other, and you end up late at night and you just envision, I know this is a work of fiction, but you envision like in Lethal Weapon with Mel Gibson sitting there on his couch with the picture of his dead wife and a firearm at his side and sticking it in his mouth and just bringing himself right up to the brink. And
it happens.
You know, people do that all the time.
Children get shot, shoot each other. People take their own lives. This is the most dangerous thing you can have in your home.
That's how the babies get the guns, Steve Stockman, you asshole. Thank God that guy's in prison.
We're going to need your ID for this Sudafed.
And he is not an inmate. Inmates are in mental institutions. All right. Well, the Shadow Docket Show is coming up next on our Patreon page. I've got a gigantic pollgasm. I got a bunch of poll results here to talk about. Beth on our Patreon page is going to love me after today's Shadow Docket.
Cool.
Plus, Joe Biden sets another record. We're going to talk about that. Something out of the Florida Supreme Court and gerrymandering. A whole lot of other stuff here, too.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to listen and find out. $5 a month to sign up for the Shadow Docket on our Patreon page. That's bobsuskashow.com. Run, don't walk, do it now. And we'll see you over there, folks. Take care. Have a great day. Bye-bye.